All right. We've done this enough time. We're 12 seasons in. We're not pros. I was going to say we're basically pros, but in the basic sense, we're not pros.
True.
Only the laptop
we are,
and equipment.
We are, however, experienced.
Terribly so.
We're terribly experienced. We don't need to be professionals to be experienced at setting up microphones, setting up that thing over there. Well, you do. The nice thing is I don't need to do anything. I just kind of sit in front of this thing and do audio test. And was that too loud?
No, it was actually surprisingly quiet in the monitor.
Oh, good. The MVB's days are numbered, David.
That's true. And that number is December 13th, which is the last number we can be confident that the state will not impose fines for it being here.
Didn't you say Patrick got... Look, I just entered back into the bargaining phase for a moment there. I was going to ask about whether Patrick was able to get... Or the details of Patrick getting those fines removed from that fence. But then I stopped myself from asking that question. It's like, just let it go. Just let the MVB go.
Patrick was very sparse on details about what was involved there. He described it as a pain in the ass, and he was talking about a lot of money. Whether that money was paid or avoided, I don't really want to consider, honestly. Because I'm assuming some amount of money did have to change hands for it. Just based on the way... He sent me roughly 30 words about this. I have very little information to go on.
Okay.
But like, we are in agreement that this building probably ought to come down.
You and Patrick are?
No, you and I.
Okay, yes.
Apologies on the pronoun reallocation there. But yeah, there's... it's been a good run, I suppose, and it's time for it to come to an end.
For the record, I second what you just said about being in agreement about this building needing to come down.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, we've now restabilized our subject-object agreement.
Yeah, just wanted to make sure that you weren't talking about you and Patrick there, but yeah.
No.
I am okay with saying... Am I okay with saying goodbye to this? I'm okay on some level. It's sad. I liked this place, but... You know, this is the universe telling me, get the fuck out of here, Matt. Also, the AC just broke.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The number of bad omens that have been auspicious about the demolition of this building in the last month is really pretty incredible.
Usually, when you press this button on the mic, on the, so that still works. The dee-dee-dee, when you turn it on. And that sound still works, the do-do-do when you turn it off. But when you press the temperature change button, it's supposed to do a ding-ding-ding. There's no ding-ding-ding anymore. And more importantly, there's no
You haven't been able to read what it... Oh, air, okay. Yeah. I mean, the display's been botched for months.
Ever since the lightning strike and... Well, no. Since it was fixed, the screen has been broken. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on there. But anyway,
no,
it's not producing air.
Yeah, those small air conditioners definitely don't seem to have a longevity that they should. I had one Medea AC. It didn't fail, but the fan has started knocking. And that might be fixable, but it's really hard to summon the will to disassemble a $300 window AC to possibly fix something in full knowledge that I will break something on the way out. Like, just the odds of me doing something else to screw it up. It's one of the unfortunate qualities of that kind of product.
Yeah. Let's talk about the MVB. I've got a list of details about this building that we might change for... We could change for next time. Are you ready?
We'll get to the next time component later. Let's hear deed number one. What do you got?
Wait, what?
I was just saying, we'll put a pin in the discussion of whether or not this building comes back.
Okay.
In favor of discussing these details.
Sure. So just a review of the MVB, kind of in random order. So the skylights are loud. You knew this from your old place. Like, you called your skylights the, what do you call them? The analog rain sensor.
That's correct.
And They are the analog rain sensor, and I think that because this room is smaller than at your old place, the noise is amplified a lot.
Yeah.
So this becomes a noise, the noise zone during the rain.
Skylights in general feel like something that it's not suitable for house-sized projects. Just logistically, everything is wrong with them. It's the idea of them is really nice because it lets in natural light.
Yeah.
But even these are the proper, like, tinted on the outside, double paned. These should be about as good. These are about as good as non-expensive skylights get. But they let heat in during the day. They let coal. I mean, logistically, they're a total nightmare. If you're not running a museum, they don't make sense.
And the peace of mind erosion that happens as a result, like you just talked about heat transfer in and out of the building, but also you wonder, when is water going to start transferring in?
Yeah, that too.
Not out, but into the building. And
we didn't have a leak in this building, did
we? That's correct. Yeah, we did not have any leaks.
That's a virtual high five right there.
Yeah, here it is. We're sitting pretty far across the table, so we can't actually high five, but we just high fived.
I do like this distance, though.
Yeah, it's a healthy distance.
Yeah, this will be good. The gym setup will also, or the stage setup, I guess I should say, will also have this distance, and I think I like it for podcasting purposes.
Yeah, it's nice.
Makes it feel more like conferential.
We're at the conference table. We got a bunch of pens here, so that. We don't have one of the speakerphone setups. We don't have anyone calling in, so we might like fib one of those, but we can get there.
I have one of those. It's on my table of things that I may dispose of, though. So
I saw your table. Yeah, yeah. We can talk about the table. But
that's definitely secondary. We need to
not before the skylights.
Yeah.
So we were talking about skylights. One of the other details I wanted to point out with the skylight is we had these in-cuts. So when you I don't know if you designed this in PowerPoint, but like the touch. In fact, I seem to recall a diagram that you did in PowerPoint about the sight from the loft. The loft kicks ass, by the way. We'll get to that. Up to the sky. Those in-cuts make it so that you can see the skylight at night. But you can't really see the sky at night, so you're talking about like the optics of the skylight, and it's such that the image of whatever is on the other side is blurred enough such that I almost never did that. I almost never looked up at the sky, even though I could do it because we had the cutouts. I'd look at it. And even on a starry night, it's like you can't really see the stars. Maybe you can see the idea of stars, but you can't see the stars. Mm. So that would not be a pro in favor of skylights, I would say.
That's another example of where they don't really fit in a normal house. I suppose if you had a tall enough house, like if you had a three-story building to work with, a skylight might make sense. But it's got to be because we had to make that cutout so that if this was just a box that you were having to see 14 inches of drywall up, it, like the sight line would be such that it's totally obscured from the roof. So that was an attempt to fix that problem. But the real answer was just don't use skylights. Like they're not the right thing. We would have been better off if you had wanted a view, not necessarily even of the sky. It would have been to put windows in the rake wall.
And so that was another thing on this list here. It just says literally, and this is actually the first thing that I wrote down: more windows.
Yeah.
More windows would have been nice. Better window placement. Better window placement too. And that just like that talks about just the design generally of the building and thinking through like what is going to be where. Like for example, I'm thinking of the bed up there right now. And the bed, like, it's the height of it is such that that window is usable if you kind of squish your head down to the level of the mattress and make your head sideways. So I did that quite a lot. It's like, oh, I can see out the window. Maybe my neck isn't going to like this. Maybe I'll switch it to the other side to, okay, great. This is uncomfortable on the other side. So now it's symmetric too. So it was much better than having no window. And you'll recall that in the original design for the building, we didn't have that window up there.
No,
and the only reason it was there is because I think that during the build, you were like, all right, final chance. Should we have a window here? And I think it was the two of us that looked at each other, and maybe someone else was involved, and we were all like, yeah, we should have a window here.
Yeah.
So we got the window, and I'm very happy that that window existed.
Yeah. And the only reason it's as small as it is because it's at the joint.
Right next to the pony wall thing.
Yeah, it's the joint of the crown and the rake wall. Yeah.
The pony wall was the was the one on the east side that I learned about stud placement from.
Yeah.
You remember that? When I was tasked while we were framing out the building with building that pony wall, and I fucked up the stud placement such that, like, it's fine for these two-thirds of the building, the south two-thirds, but when you get to the north one-third, all the studs are out of phase with one another, like, compared between the main wall on the east side and the rest of the pony wall up top, there's an out of step of 4 inches with the studs. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's how studs are supposed to work with walls. Got it.
Thankfully, that's largely inconsequential.
But... Right. And this was like, this was one of the reasons why I was happy to work on this building. It's because I wanted to learn stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that was one of the lessons that I was, going to say that I took away from it. We'll see during whatever next builds whether I have actually learned that lesson. I don't know. I think I've used stuff like that in subsequent tasks, but yeah, that's what happened with the pony wall.
No, and it's not, you know, it can be spoken as a joke, but this building was very deliberately a learning experience.
Yeah.
It was designed to be our first building of scale that was a fully usable structure, because we had never done that before. This was the biggest building we had built on the property.
And I got to use it for 2.5 years, but I only used it for 2 years because I took a break from it for a while there.
Yeah, you've been in and out of this building quite a bit. I was surprised to hear you say that the... do you want to keep going through your details?
I guess
we'll segue to this. I was surprised to hear you say that the sound, and maybe a lot of this may be the skylight, and I guess I'll let you elaborate on it, the sound attenuation of the walls in this building was only about a 6 out of 10, because that's an
you're talking about sound from the outside.
Yes. Because that's an interesting lesson, because this building was significantly constructed to block outside sound. It's the reason there are no windows on the south facing wall. We used Typex drywall. We used concrete board on the outside. It's drywall.
Concrete board, the hardy plank panels?
Yeah. Yeah, we used a composite of materials that I would have thought would have been pretty good at blocking sound, but it turns out that you either need, because I don't think we used rock wall insulation. I think we used...
That's correct. We used the fiberglass
stuff. Yeah, we used fiberglass. So you either need rock wall insulation, or you need concrete block, and I have a feeling the answer is concrete block. Because the rock house, if we replace those front windows are single pane. In the bedrooms, unless the neighbors are being like dicks about subwoofers, it blocks noise quite well in that building. And it's not like they're using space-age materials of any kind. It's just concrete block walls.
Yeah, this, I would say, so when you asked me that question, like, rate it from 1 to 10, I was like, 7. And then I was like, no, 7s. Does it go up or down? Down. That's how I got a 6. I don't know. What is the sound that has bothered me while in here? I would not use that word, actually. Bothered was not really the case. Like, it didn't really bother me, other than the rain on the skylights. That was like the Achilles heel in terms of sound. But yeah, you could hear. I guess one thing is ATVs going up and down the road. Sometimes I would like that to not be. I was going to say, like, oh, let's not be able to hear this at all. And I think that's way too much to ask for any building that's not like a sound deprivation chamber. But it was a little bit too much. It's like, oh, I wish that we could attenuate the sound a little bit more. So I guess that's why I said that.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. If we had just built the south wall as a concrete face, I wonder if that would have been enough.
Maybe.
Because that would have significantly reduced it, combined with not putting in the, because having to build the whole building out of block would kind of suck.
Our original plan was two layers of drywall with the green glue, which is still in the gym right now.
It sure is.
And we didn't do that, and that was mostly on me because I was in charge of a lot of the drywall stuff, and the drywall is already at that point the drywall is already taking too long. Never mind, really the taping. Is that I may be misremembering the order
texture
there.
Is what made the drywall suck. There were building the ceiling. Was annoying, particularly with the heavy version of drywall we used.
Yeah.
But the part that took a long time was the texturing, and a lot of that was just, really?
Not the texturing. The texturing is like the warts on the wall.
Yeah.
The thing that took me a long time was the taping.
Really?
The mudding and taping.
Oh, I misremember that.
The texturing took me one long day.
Okay.
I came in here with a texture gun, and it took me like, once I figured out how to use a texture gun, which that process, like trying to figure out how to use it, took me 3 frustrating hours. But once I figured out how to use it, it was like 5 to 7 hours of just like doing all the walls.
Yep.
Straight.
Yeah.
That was the one. I came into the rock house after that, totally like with drywall mud all over me. And then I joked to you later. I was like, David, that was the one day in my life that I worked. So it was hard, but it was a one day thing.
Yeah. Based on my experience doing one wall of drywall, the only wall I could do in drywall in Rock House, thanks to the way that it's constructed.
The plaster.
Yeah, the key with drywall is to just push through it. Because the wall that I did looks completely fine.
Yeah.
Even though in an effort to abide by that specific precept, I was absolutely plastered while doing it. That's how I pushed through doing it, because I knew that wall was going to be covered with shelves and stuff. No one was going to be able to see it anyway. Right. I just needed to redo the wall. But the wall actually looks fine. Like, it's really not, unless you're just massively mechanically impaired. No one can tell.
It's one of the reasons why I was dragging my feet on the drywall a lot in here. It's because I didn't know what you're describing.
Exactly.
Right.
Neither
now.
Neither did I.
I was like, oh, if I, it does show. You can't really see it. You can actually not see it at all during the day, but the ceilings in here look pretty bad at night when the lights are turned on, such that you can like see the shadows cast from the side. So the ceilings actually kind of look pretty bad, even to just whatever untrained naked eye. But otherwise, like, I think it turned out pretty well, and I didn't need to spend as much time as I did on it.
Yeah. No, it was a summer of noncommittalism, if I remember correctly.
Uh-huh.
But that's okay.
Noncommittal and just, like, slow when I did managed to commit. But
I mean, it was
whatever.
Months. The drywall took longer than the rest of the building put together, which was unwarranted, but we didn't know. And we know for next time. So.
And we can also just do accent walls.
Or you can just do accent walls. So
The whole thing in accent walls.
These are a lot more expensive than drywall, I'd rather not do that. But looks nice, though. Yeah. I still, for some reason, cannot, to save my life, stain a board without it looking, like, to my eye, looking like I completely fucked it up. I don't know why I can't do that. I did it just fine when I used to live at the other house in the suburbs. I used to stain tables all the time, and maybe I just didn't notice how bad they looked, but like every table I do now looks absolutely awful.
I never looked at this accent wall here in the kitchen and thought like, oh, this looks bad. Like, I don't know. My standards are probably different than yours, but
they're also not tempered by what I expect it to look like. So I had an intention for what these were supposed to look like, and I can see how you would think that the way the texture is was intentional, and it is not.
Okay.
Is the problem. But
so the problem, one of the solutions is have someone else do it for you so that you can have no expectations.
Well, this is the that's one of the, it's not specifically the fulcrum of it, but it is one of the most fascinating differences between professional and amateur work.
Yeah.
is the degree to which it only matters to the person who consumes it.
Sure.
So that is a genuine justification for bringing in professional services for things. In theory, it's why you're supposed to have like realtors and lawyers and people like that and not represent yourself in those things. Is a variant of that same problem where being the provider and being the consumer are subjectively different in ways that are extremely difficult to overcome. So,
and yet you seem not to be wired for that kind of thing, and that's rubbing off on me.
Well, I just don't like people helping me.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
And just being able to do things like this yourself is, like, maybe there are downsides to that, some of which you just described. There are certainly downsides, but there are certainly great upsides too, like the savings.
Yes.
And the satisfaction of a job well done, or a job done.
And the absolute misery of when a professional does a job that you subjectively dislike.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that,
it's my least favorite feeling in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a recent example of something like that happening?
I don't let it happen. Yeah, because
maybe you have old examples and it's like never again. Yeah. And you've lived that way.
Yeah, I don't want to. I mean, it's why I'm going to strong arm Jacob into being a general contractor, because it, to be fair, that only somewhat elides the problem. The real solution to this is I need to become a general contractor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no, I don't. Yeah, I don't give other people permission to let me down is basically what that amounts to.
Low expectations, because there are no expectations.
Combined with savings is an unbeatable combination.
And combined with the investment in yourself to get even greater savings later, because you know how to do more things now.
Yep. No. Although I feel like in some ways I've plateaued on that. Some of the stuff that I've produced recently I don't feel is any better than previous stuff that I've produced. And that is partially just a demotivational thing. I haven't felt terribly motivated this year so far. Mm. And even now that the weather has finally turned in November, I'm not where I need to be to get the stuff done that I want to get done right now.
Mm. Okay.
So that's just, but that's mostly a headspace thing. I don't think I'm, you know, on most metrics, including the fun anecdote from this month and early last month, I got better at first-person shooters recently.
Okay.
I'm like better at them now than I used to be. I'm 35. I'm supposed to be way past when my like twitch capability, but my hand is steadier.
Yeah.
I don't flinch the way I used to.
Huh. And you're talking about like acquiring that flinch as you got further into your 20s?
No, I was always terrible at first-person shooters. I liked them a lot because it's gratifying to shoot a gun in cyberspace. But like, I was never at the I'm playing Black Ops 6 right now, and it's not like I'm playing ranked matches or anything. But I am reliably the second or best player on the teams I'm on,
nice.
Which is just unprecedented.
Still doing the shotgun?
I can play with anything. I actually have been doing a light machine gun.
Yeah.
Because it's the last thing they would expect. The light machine gun.
That's actually fun. The LMG is pretty fun.
Well, the light machine gun, in particular, in Black Ops 6 has introduced a lot of, I'll be terse on this since it's not the topic, but Black Ops 6 is easily the best Call of Duty that's come out in a long time. It's a really solid game. It looks beautiful. It plays like, all of the sound design and all that stuff. I haven't played one in 3 years. It is all really solid. But Call of Duty games traditionally, a light machine gun has been sort of a fixture of the campaign where you just need 100 bullets and a magazine to mow down as many people as possible. And doesn't make a lot of sense in multiplayer because you're slow and they balance it in such a way that the time to kill with an assault rifle is almost always faster than it is with a light machine gun. just as a balancing thing, because you do have a lot of bullets. But they added, and this happened a couple of years ago, they added a mount action where if you are near a hard surface, either vertical or horizontal, you can rest the gun on it. And it makes it much more stable.
Okay.
And if you have a position like that, which there are plenty around, even in a game as fast as Black Ops 6, nobody's prepared for you to just be sitting there just blasting in a direction. Because everybody is timing. Everybody has an internal subconscious timer about how long they think 30 rounds takes to come out of a gun. Mm. And they almost reliably, when that timer clicks, pop out, assuming you're out.
Yeah, okay.
And you're not. But I don't even need... I mean, in those matches, I'm, like, far and away the best player on the deal. Like, it's not... It's embarrassing how easy it is to do. But I don't even need to do that. Like you mentioned, I was, you know, I was running around shotgunning, which I loved to do when I was 17. I just died a lot more. And I don't think the kids are getting worse at these games.
No.
I think it is literally, it's one of those things where as I've gotten older, I don't feel, and this has been a very long segue, but I leaned in this direction on purpose because I want to ask what your experience of this has been. I feel more capable now in literally all regards today than 10 years ago.
Okay.
Like across the board. Physically, mentally, etc. I'm the ways in which I am slower than I used to be. That kind of speed is of the most superficial and irrelevant type. It's not useful speed. And even in Twitch things, I type faster now than I used to. I like practiced a little bit, and my typing speed. I remember, and it was funny. You did partially inspire this because one time I like mentioned offhandedly, and I did say it with a bit of arrogance because it is fast for a normal human being. I mentioned that my average typing speed, or my burst typing speed was like 80 words a minute, and you're like, that's not very fast. And I was like, that hit me. I was like,
oh no, I did not mean
Christ.
To do that.
What is it? Because everyone, if you talk to any like normal office worker, or at a minimum, the people that I work with who are all like 50, 60 years old,
yeah.
None of them type over 70 words a minute. And most of them type way slower than that.
Yeah, you don't really need to type fast always. It can be an important thing to do.
Well, there is an advantage to it up to about 150, because at around 100...
You can actually get your thoughts down onto the keyboard about as fast as you can think them at that point.
Or at least as fast as you can say them.
At least, sure.
You can dictate at 150.
Okay.
You can dictate a conversation. And I'm nowhere near that, but my burst rate is up near 110 now. And that feels great.
Well done.
That feels way better.
Have you just practiced by doing a bunch of typing on like monkey type?
Yeah.
Okay.
But now I want to turn the table on you. How do you feel about what I just said?
I was a little bit surprised about the in all regards qualification that you put on the more capable comment. Personally, I wouldn't say that I feel more capable in all regards myself. However, when you were talking about that, I was like, why might that not be? And I think that perhaps I still have as much raw capability in all regards, but that I'm undertrained compared to my peaks in the different pursuits that I've found myself in over the years. So, for example, I'm currently nowhere near as good at the things that I studied in college as I was when I was actively training those things. But I think that if I were to train those things once again, that it's possible for me to. By the way, we've got some kind of yellow flying insect flying around right now, distracting us a little bit.
It was probably close enough to this mic to pick up.
So I think that if I were to train in the fields that I were training in before, that I would still be as capable. So there's that. I'm currently stronger, like more physically able than I have ever been. I'm in the best shape of my life right now. So that's cool. Like, I'm actively working on that right now. Not so much the rock climbing, but the kettlebell work and the barbell training work. Like, I'm at a higher point than I've ever been before. So that's good. Am I more capable, like, in terms of constructing and building things? Well, yeah, because I've been working on that. So there's that. Yeah, I don't feel like I'm getting slower in the things that I'm applying myself to, is how I guess I could sum that up.
Yeah, that's certainly a parallel feeling. I mean, I was led to believe that by the time you get to around 30,
yeah,
that you start to atrophy in ways that are difficult to recover from, or that you have to, like, offset by being better at other things. I don't feel that at all.
Yeah, I think maybe that's a default thing for not taking care of yourself, or just, like, letting life happen to you. But if you, like, sleep and eat well, and, like, just take care of yourself, I think that's not an inevitability.
Yeah. It certainly doesn't seem to be, at least not the way that it was portrayed to me. So, I mean, I weigh more than I should, frankly. I weigh 220, and I would rather weigh 205. But that's literally the only, that's pretty much the only deficiency. Other than that, it's been fine.
And you've not focused on that. Like, you've been focusing on other things.
Oh, I've focused on it. I've then just fallen. I don't want it enough.
Okay.
Like, and I know from past experience, if I want it enough, I will do it.
Sure.
But not yet, apparently. Anyway, it was just curiosity. And of course, that will factor in, because the next leg of life is starting soon. For you more than me, I suppose, but there is a paradigm shift in the fact that we're demolishing this building and potentially replacing it and some other structures on the property with other things.
Yeah, and the other thing that's happening in my world right now is Brittany, my sister's, having a baby.
Right.
And that's got me thinking about, like, what is it that I want out of life a lot myself.
Yeah.
And, like, there's that, and there's also the, okay, I'm getting back into actuarial work. We could call that actuaria, kind of like academia, but by the way, this is an aside. When a doctor says that they're going back, they can say, I'm going back to medicine. When a lawyer says they're going back, they can say, I'm going back to law. What does an actuary say? There's no good answer to that question.
Back to work.
Back to work, right. You go back to actuaria.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying for now. I'm going back to actuaria, aside over. So I'm doing that. I'm becoming an uncle, and it seems to be pretty important to me, because, like, she's the one sister and this is the one baby. So I'm transitioning from, like, non-uncle person to uncle person.
Right.
And I don't know, like, Brittany's, she's one of, if not the, my most favorite, let me say that again. Brittany is, if not one of my most favorite people on earth, the most favorite person on earth, for me. And, like, the fact that she's having a baby is pretty big, and it's made me think, like, what is it, where do I want to be? How do I want to be? Like, how much service do I want to offer to my family? And, like, what is going to be my position with respect to, family-like things? I did not say that very well, but suffice it to say, I'm thinking about these things.
Yep.
And I think you get it.
Yeah. No, I technically passed that mark when my brother had a kid, which didn't hit me the way that I would have expected it to. I thought, for sure, it's not that I don't have, like, some amount of that nag, but it's much more muted than I would have expected it to be. It hasn't prevented my mom from complaining about it incessantly, but...
Complaining about what specifically?
About me not having one so far.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's been more muted than I expected. But I also know that I don't like small children, so that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. When I went through that and was kind of vague about what I was talking about just a moment ago, I wasn't necessarily discussing becoming a father myself, although that is entering into it a little bit. But it is a lot of what I'm considering right now is so fatherhood for me is a possibility, whereas unclehood for me and parenthood for my sister and my brother-in-law is the true reality that is about to happen, coming soon. It's the now ability, right? And then it comes back on me. It's like, okay, what do I want my position to be in this true reality that is happening coming in January, coming right. soon? Yep. And that's the question. That's the more imminent question for me to answer right now. And then the more like nebulous and medium term thing is like, is the parenthood thing for myself.
Yep.
But I'm not thinking so much about that. I'm thinking more like, okay, what do I want to be? What do I want to be to my sister and my brother-in-law?
Yeah,
and to my nephew.
I was referring to that, but my apathy about it overrode that concern, so I started immediately talking about fatherhood instead.
Okay,
so
sure.
That's just sort of the way that I'm wired. I'm sure I will be a more prominent figure in Frederick and Anastasia's lives as they get up toward like third, fourth grade.
Okay.
But I just, like, small children, just their mannerisms just annoy me too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
they're God. Anyway.
I felt very similarly when I was in my mid-20s, and that was when I was like, there's no way I'm becoming a father because of those kinds of things. I'm still annoyed by the mannerisms of the tiniest people, but not as severely as I was in my mid-20s, where it like actually made me like express like disgust on my face. Like, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I've seen so much evidence that people enjoy being around 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 year olds. Uh-huh. I clearly don't have whatever enjoyment those people have.
All right,
so they can have it. I've relinquished that specific aspiration. So anyway, back to the MVB. Colors. So predominantly this place is pink on the outside,
yeah,
blue on the inside.
Midnight Path.
Midnight Path?
That was the name of the blue that we got.
That's inaccurate.
I agree.
This is not.
It's like a sky blue-ish, yeah, with like a twinge of gray in it. If I were to paint the inside of this building again, would not choose this color. I'm not happy with this color.
What would you go with?
I'm not sure. Probably something. I like the color of your lounge, actually. It's kind of that orangish.
Terracotta.
Yeah, the terracotta thing.
Yep.
I like that color.
That's actually, not to segue, but to compliment talking about the coloration lighting, yeah. I am entirely sold on lights being no higher than eye line,
okay,
inside a building. The reason why that terracotta works in that structure is because there are no overhead lights. If there were overhead lights, the shadows would... There's something about the specific way that an overhead light casts shadows that, A, it fatigues me, but also it makes colors like that less vibrant. In the lounge, all of the light comes from sconces, and those sconces are emanating light through the paint,
yeah,
basically. So instead of like in here where all of the light's up top, the primary reflection is the white of the ceiling. In the lounge, the primary reflection is the brown of the wall.
Uh-huh.
And that just makes the whole place much cozier.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the floor has that color too. You've got the hardwood floor in there.
Yeah, maybe that's
not
helps.
It's probably not contributing too much, but it's also probably not hurting. Yeah, that color is good.
Yeah, I'm not saying we have to use sconce lighting. I would just highly recommend it,
because mm-hmm.
it's even the boardroom has a problem because for the same reason it's purple, and the purple is the primary reflective color in there, which I believe is why it feels so dark in there, because the purple does not, like, the fill effect of a purple illumination is not anywhere near as strong as a brown one.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't know if I want to paint that room either. I like that the room is like unnerving slightly, because that's like kind of, it's a room of action. So
it's where things happen in there, including Frostpunk.
It's a better name.
Yes.
Terribly named game.
We played a board game in there recently.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, I might also be conflating my distaste of the color of the walls with the absence of windows. Those things, I guess, go hand in hand. But I like that. I like the accent wall. I like the color of the bathroom, too, the green that we picked in there. I think that was sage.
Yeah, it's definitely a sagey type color.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. By the way, I think that that my choices for these colors came from choices that I made for bedsheet colors back in 2018 or 19. I went online in search of like, oh, what are good bedsheet colors to get? It's kind of like doing the thing that you do at the bedsheet store, but on the internet instead. And I decided on those exact colors for the sets of bed sheets that I have, like the light blue and the green. And I think ultimately I was like, oh, what are the colors that I get in the building? The same colors as the bed sheets, clearly. So that happened.
Loft, let's talk about it.
The loft kicks ass.
All right.
Really like the loft, the two lofts here. The one caveat being don't fall off, and I did manage to achieve that so far. Like, we've got another 2 weeks or whatever.
As in, you have
so
not fallen off.
I've correct. Yeah, okay. That's correct. Yeah, I've not fallen off. I've just.
What's closest you've come?
I've not come very close.
Okay.
Even with the maneuver from the love seat up in the loft, there's a maneuver to be sure that you need to undergo to like properly get out of that chair without dying or without injuring yourself. But it's possible. You can do it, and just be careful each time, and remember, like, you're in your house, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're safe.
How much has the handhold around the edge helped? Could you do without it?
Yeah, it'd be possible to do without it. During the couple of particular maneuvers that I'm talking about right now, like, for example, the most important one is just transitioning from the loft onto the ladder. And that's one. I am using the wooden handhold around the perimeter of the loft, but really I'm just putting the heel of my hand onto it and not really grabbing the thing. So it's more just like a getting your forearm vertical and like putting your weight into it that way, as opposed to like a let me hold on to this kind of thing.
Is there a shape that it could have been that would make it better for that purpose? Did it need to be thinner? Did it?
I really didn't feel a need for anything there, really.
Okay.
Maybe it's an improvement that could be made, but I never found myself wanting for anything there. Now I will speak in favor of what we're talking about now, the perimeter around the loft, by saying that the raised perimeter there, that 2x4 on top, made it so that whenever I was like making adjustments to the bed, like making the bed, putting sheets on and stuff like that, I had the peace of mind of knowing that I could never like move my bed such that it would tip off and fall out of the loft. Sure. So that was really nice to have that there for that reason.
I wonder if we could have gotten away with just having a lip, just a little flat bar that went across.
Yeah, probably.
And it would have saved some space, too, because I put that up there deliberately as a hand or foot hold, assuming for safety reasons that it'd be necessary.
Yeah.
But if it could be, you know, an inch wide, it would save you 3 inches around the perimeter of that, which is not nothing up there. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah, it was fine. I didn't find myself wanting for any more safety. I felt really exposed up there for like the first month or two. I was like, I'm going to fucking die. And then I got used to it and was like, okay, this is not a problem. I just need to be careful.
Did you ever find a way to catapult your way into the kitchen? That was maybe the longest standing bucket list item. You just perpetually wanted a way to get from your bed into the kitchen.
The closest that I got to like getting creative about getting downstairs is the following.
Now you're on the top two rungs of this ladder.
For listeners, I'm not going to describe this. This is for me only.
Down to the third one, and then you can just kind of like swing down into it, and then bang your foot back on the ladder. And fall down.
It would be pretty funny if that's the moment that you finally injured yourself in this building.
I was hoping for it.
Demonstrating. It seemed pretty close there for a second.
Yeah.
I assume that's mostly a hammock and not a Tarzan swing, or is it?
That's correct. Yeah, this is a hammock chair.
Okay. Yeah, there's at least a couple of obvious things to salvage, but it's mostly an intact structure, so I don't know how much we're really going to get out of it.
Yeah, and also, like, what is the timeline on whatever other things it could use salvage materials from this is a question.
Yeah, well, I think the way we need to play this probably is to move you out a week before and then demo over a week.
Yeah, that's what I had in mind, too.
Yeah, we'll cut, because we can definitely, like, the accent wall, these boards are all reusable. I'll cut them out and take them. That pocket door might actually be salvageable. I don't know how hard that would be to remove. But
our second pocket door. Yeah. We could get it out.
Yeah. The bathtub will be interesting.
Out the window.
I mean, it should fit through those windows. Those windows are pretty big, so. And if they're not,
we can make them bigger.
But have you picked any scenes you want? Any B-roll you want to get?
I've not really been. It's not been at the front of my mind, but sure. It's working as a background process. You're talking about the as we demo the building, like what shots to get?
Yeah.
I don't know yet, but we can come up with ideas.
Yeah, we gotta get some stuff. I have not been thinking about it either. I don't really know what I've been thinking about. My mind's been really, because for the first week after we got the notice, I was just sort of recalibrating what it meant generally for the property, and then after that, like the extension didn't change any of that. It just sort of disconnected it from time, because there was like time pressure to understand the situation, uh-huh. And now there's less time pressure to understand the situation, yeah. And that didn't like improve anything. It just extended the timeline, basically.
Uh-huh.
So maybe we should have just rushed and did all this stuff instead of stalling out for another 2 weeks. But
I'm glad that we got a little bit more time.
That's fair. I can see how you would feel that way, since it's the building you're living in. So.
That's probably the reason.
I can see that being part of it. I am also mostly talking about the other stuff that we have to take care of, so, because that's just going to drag out for a month.
But I'm not sure what you're talking about.
The other tents and stuff. We have to take tube sock down and all that stuff.
Ah, yeah, okay. Yeah. The tube sock and also the other...
The car tents.
Okay.
And fingers crossed we don't have to move the container, but we'll see. It wasn't flagged specifically, because there are ordinances that are specific to container units, and none showed up because the container is
that's not necessarily saying a lot, though.
But it's not, if we do get dinged for it, it would be a separate compliance charge. The ones that we have listed, a container is not an accessory dwelling structure. It has its own codes related to it, mm-hmm. And those would have been enumerated. So
that's where I slightly disagree. Like, maybe they just forgot to put that one there.
Well,
or maybe they could come and say later, like, hey, we meant this too, even though it's not on your initial paper.
Yes, but that should, in theory, give us extra time, because that's generally how the law works. If they don't,
okay, fair
enough.
It doesn't
apply retroactively. So.
That's fair enough, yeah.
But I guess we'll find out one way or the other, because we are not moving that thing if we don't have to. So, what was the day in the life of MEB like, as compared to, say, an apartment or a house or any of the many, many other cars you've lived in?
one of the differences is you can play music loudly in here. In apartments that I've had, I've always been pretty conscious of what my neighbors are thinking. So it's like, oh, I don't want to play music too loud. So that's pretty nice to be able to play music loudly. I don't do it too often, but it was a difference compared to the days in my lives of other places, cars included. Cars excluded, because I guess in cars you can also play music loudly.
If you're on the road,
yeah. Waking up, one of the other reasons that the loft kicks ass is waking up in the loft and being able to look down on the rest of the world is something also that kicks ass. It's just like, here I am waking up and, oh, I can like peer down onto the rest of the world, i.e. my house. But it feels good to be up high. And that's an experience that I've not had. Have I had that experience anywhere else? I don't think I have. So that was something unique for me to the MVB. Appreciated. What else? So I guess a con here is not so much the MVB as much as my lifestyle lately. Working and living in the same building while sort of doing my own thing. That was earlier this year trying to get the tech job and now doing the actuary thing. It was too much in one small space.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to have supplemented this space with a downtown office at this point. That wouldn't necessarily be the case all the time. And if I had a job that I liked and could do from home, I'd probably be happy to do that from the MVB. Again, though, I don't think that's a unique to the MVB sort of thing. So there's that.
Yeah.
One of the things that I did not like about this is the toilet situation, including the rhino. It made me feel like... hesitant to let people come in here because it's like, oh, I'm gonna have to be conscious of their toilet use.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's enough to just be mindful of how much I'm using the toilet and like needing to walk the rhino, so to speak, such that it caused me to be more hesitant to have people over. And that was a bummer, but that's something that could be fixed in a future building.
Yep.
What else? So we can talk about the kitchenette. I like the kitchenette a lot. One of the things that I liked about it was, and one of the things I liked about being in the MVB generally that the kitchenette kind of represents, is how it has further sealed into me just this simplicity. Like, I don't need a lot. And living in the MVB and just preparing food here has demonstrated to me and has, like, gotten me even more used than I was before to just simplicity. And I think that, like sure, I might continue along the hedonic treadmill of, like, different aspects of life, including what you eat, what you prepare in the kitchen, but I can now think back to my time in the MVB and be like, remember that time where you just ate simple meals? And like, also I supplemented that by eating out sometimes too.
True,
but that's fine. But I can think back, it's like, you don't need a lot and you demonstrated that. And now that I've done this here in my mid-30s, I think it's like really like it, like this probably would already have been true having done this or something like this in my 20s. But now that I'm still able to do this kind of thing in my 30s, I'm happy that I'm not going to need much. Or I'm happy to think that never will I really need to like expand my tastes or my requirements for my living space. And that's really cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I can believe that. It's funny, you have a larger Instant Pot than I do.
that was a historical accident, but yeah.
Yeah. No, it's and of course you every day walk into the maximalist paradise hell of my kitchen, which has happy to say we've got not only a mini waffle maker coming in, but also
oh my God. But, you just got that griddle.
Well, I got the griddle, yeah. I mean, that's to replace the stove is almost certainly going to become a fire hazard sooner than later, so I need to get rid of it. But
okay.
The because this you're really not supposed to put an electric range outdoors, but
okay.
But I didn't want to have it inside, so that's where it got to go. But now I got that griddle, and I'm asked for a rice cooker for Christmas.
The holiday.
That's the holiday I'm looking
yeah.
for. Yeah,
Xmas.
So yeah, so even more appliances. I'm gonna have to rebuild the counter to accommodate them. I'm very happy about that as well.
No, you're not.
What?
No, you're not.
I'm absolutely rebuilding it. I need to recover. I moved the kitchen counter from one room into another room and then had to retrofit a shelving unit. I'm going to rebuild the countertop so that it goes to the wall so that I can have one set of appliances and then I can have the second story of appliances. because there is nothing more satisfying about the kitchen experience than the factory-like motion of foods between different machines. I don't cook anything in one box.
Okay.
It goes from the microwave
yeah.
to the toaster to okay. the air fryer
wow.
to the Instant Pot.
Back into the microwave.
I love using all of these devices in succession. It makes me feel like... It makes the food process feel way more productive.
Whereas I just move it from the fridge to the Instant Pot to my mouth, well, by way of a plate.
Yeah.
No one has time to move their food from unit to unit like this.
So that's where you're wrong, because
I see.
Nobody is making food faster than
okay.
Food Alley. Food Alley is,
all right.
is the bleeding edge of rapid food delivery. I have a hard limit of 15 minutes of food prep
yeah.
for all meals.
I see. Okay.
And I always hit it because between the cutting station
yeah.
and the toasting station and the variety of other places that things can be processed, that is a well-oiled machine.
I see.
And in theory, even though this will be of no use ever because I don't ever intend on there being more than one person living in that house at this point, five people could eat in that kitchen. Like, because there are all of those independent machines.
Mm-hmm.
You just move between them. It's like the air fryer is slightly smaller than you would want it to be, which is fine because you have five other sources of heat, spinning, chopping, and other processes that you can go through instead. Which is funny to consider because the Instant Pot, as I alluded to, I guess you do have a toaster oven here. So you do have two forms of heat at least, and a microwave. Never mind, you got three.
I got the kettle behind you too. That's a fourth one.
Never mind. This is nothing minimal about this. Intense indulgence going on here. Your microwave's also bigger than mine.
Another historical accident.
But
that was salvaged from the hangar.
Oh, was it?
I think that came from the original single wide.
Oh.
Which is, it's funny that I'm not sure about that, because if it came from the original single wide, I would remember using that microwave in the original single wide, and yet, although I think I did, I'm not positive.
That's the Sandhill Crane over the range microwave oven.
Beep.
That's that one.
Okay.
Yeah. So that one.
That's
so you
where
did,
I remember it from.
You did use that one before. Just two
yeah,
houses
Yeah, I just
ago.
Couldn't. Yeah, I couldn't recall it because it seemed familiar, and yet I was like, "But I can't put my finger on it. I'm not sure."
And you're right.
Yeah,
it is familiar. But no, I'm all in on having as many appliances that do basically one thing correctly as possible, which is largely experienced from using other people's spork-like appliances that just piss me off to no end.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, I bought a MacBook Pro. Which is the exact opposite of what I'm talking about, which is a machine I'm trying to get to do all of my processing now.
The Spork computer.
Yeah, it's a really nice Spork.
Yeah?
It pretty much, it has, I'm sorry to say, satisfied every thing I hoped it would do. Like, it has across the board been not a fulfilling experience. That's probably too strong and existential. But I haven't been disappointed by any facet of it at all. It is more compact than my old computer. The speakers are better. The mic's better. The screen's way better. It's way faster. It's just like, just generally. And the reason why I'm sorry to say that is that it so flies in the face of my general philosophy of use to have one machine that does everything. But in tech, I think that might be appropriate. And this is something, I promise this is related to MVB. The minimum viable building has an interesting conceit built into it, where even though, and you have used the space in such a way that it is minimal and essential, because it has to be because of all the space, you were forced into that because MVB is a spork. You've built MVB. That wasn't necessary. I understand why you did it, because I'm sure you can feel waves of resentment from you doing anything in my house, and I understand that. But that was an option. but you opted to move everything into, how many square feet is this? It's what, like 15 by 20?
Including the loft, 400.
Yeah, it's like 400 square feet-ish of 1.5-story space. So you made the MacBook Pro of buildings to live in. And I'm curious, while you can take the advantages of knowing that this is all you need, would you be interested in a more distributed, deliberative architecture if there were the old compound idea of public-private space, where this is basically where you sleep and do like your individual hobbies, and then there's a more centralized hub where the other stuff happens? Is that still appealing?
It is. I think that I didn't take as much advantage of that kind of concept, even though it was available to me. And I did do it with the external shower, not bathroom, but rather shower.
And with the
MVB didn't have.
I should walk that back a little bit. You did some amount of distributed processing over there, but not nearly as much as you could have.
Yeah, I could have done more kitchening in the rock house. I could have done more working, like computing stuff in the rock house too, just more general hanging out, could have done over there too. I guess the reason that I didn't do so much of this is because I didn't talk with you enough about like what the expectations of my use over there were. So I turned that like mostly into just a relaxing kind of space. So you talked about how I use the deck. I would go like just hang out on the deck, like read on the deck.
Yeah.
When I see you and some friends out there, it's like, oh, I'm going to go hang out with them because I'm seeing them. I'm not looking, I haven't been looking at like the chats, like Discord or whatever you use.
Yep.
So what I do instead is I look out the window to see if anything's happening. Oh, something's happening over there. That's like my equivalent of looking at the chat that other people do, which, by the way, I might change that. Like I might actually get onto the internet once again, but you know, we can talk about that later.
Back to work.
That's one way of putting it, yeah. But a lot of the time I just like looked out the window. Oh, something's happening. Let me go out there.
And that's a good, if that's possible, if that works. Uh-huh. I mean, that's basically the ideal way.
Yeah, agreed. because I can just choose when to look out the window. Like my phone's not bothering me.
Yeah, exactly.
I get pissed off at my phone bothering me, so I don't do that.
As a design principle, the ability to look out the window and see other things happening is, like, the emergent character of that is ideal.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I like that. The other one was, I don't know, like, I guess, what do I want to say? I didn't want to feel like I was imposing on you by, like, using your kitchen. I kind of saw it as a you thing.
Oh, yeah, and no, I understand that. And for what it's worth, I didn't do anything to push you to do it. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not, it, there was, there's a push-pull there.
There's a push-pull. And also, like, what I had here was sufficient. And this goes back to the comment that I made earlier about, like, I could have just talked with you and we could have come to some kind of agreement about what kitchen use looks like what times of day, what are the expectations for cleaning up, and I just decided not to do that. I didn't decide not to do that. I just made a decision. I didn't make any decision at all, and it was just like inertia that, like, for example, I've left and come back a couple times while the rock house has been continuing to develop over the last 2.5 years or so. Like, for example, you were describing Food Alley. Food Alley, I think, became a thing while I was in Denver for 2 months back in 2021 to 2022, the winter.
You weren't here during the move.
Yeah, and then I came back and like your house was different. So when the house changes in its character, the habits that the people that use the house had in that old space kind of get demolished along with the demolition of that physical space. And we never like had, I never initiated the conversation to like start to build up those new kinds of habits around the new space.
Yep.
As far as myself goes. And that was fine. Like there was no necessity for me to, I didn't feel the need to do that kind of thing.
Yep.
So it just didn't happen and it was fine. But it also resulted in perhaps lower efficiency or just generally less use of the space than it could have had. And perhaps that's a missed opportunity. But I didn't feel like it. I didn't feel like I was missing anything really.
Sure. And again, it's not like you don't use the space. You also use the lounge semi-regularly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do wish.
Especially when a book about typewriters shows up.
Absolutely. I mean, it's to the point of emergent visibility. The one thing I don't like about the lounge, I really like the specific room structure that I have right now. I think that's close to ideal and is scalable. I think if six people were using one space, I would still keep the same structure of rooms. You have a room for work-like stuff. You'd maybe make the kitchen and specifically the gaming-type area equivalent, but the lounge in particular as like a quiet reading space or conversation space, I think it's works really well. Mm. The problem is that it's secluded. And you can't tell anybody's in there unless you are fully inside the house. And I think it'd be better if it was the other way around. But
How the other way around?
Oh, sorry. I guess I didn't describe the. So right now the boardroom is the one is the room that's closer to the outside, and I think the lounge should be where the boardroom is.
I see.
But the problem, the space is an issue because I wouldn't want the lounge and the boardroom flipped. They used to sort of be flipped because the boardroom used to be where the lounge is and it wasn't big enough, which is why I moved in the room I did. But these are all considerations for a future, much larger structure, so which pets would interfere with. Pets are a very interesting wrench in compound ideas.
I want to come back to the pet thing. I have a more near-term consideration. I need to go pee.
Okay.
So I'll be back in just a moment.
Okay. And back.
You're about to talk about pets.
Pets.
So the monkey wrench in the plan was pets. Or if not monkey wrench, something else.
Pets introduce a very weird dynamic. It would be one thing if pets were all introduced to everyone in the context of a compound situation. But bringing pets from other houses together into one space, I can imagine being borderline deal-breaking, just given the way that pets tend to acclimate to private living spaces, particularly their socialization. And I know this because the Bobecks run basically a zoo.
Personal zoo.
And they have two dogs, four cats, two rats now. I think they have other animals. I'm not remembering right now. But, like, they all get along just fine.
Yeah.
Like, they have no problem. I can imagine all kinds of animals that would not survive in that environment. Or even just two animals brought together from, and we have experience with this with dogs, who basically don't get along.
Are you talking about Spooky and Rose?
What? And Huxley, for that matter. Like, none of the three of those dogs like each other. And it would be terribly interesting to try to have a situation where they were around, particularly animals that are more obnoxious than others, who are insistent and can potentially ruin spaces. 'Cause it's one thing if they're just terrorizing your own house. But if they're terrorizing the entire communal space, uh-huh. that's a serious problem.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think most people would be okay with having their dog or cat only roam a 400 square foot terrain of their private quarters. So not sure what to do
really?
With that.
I agree with everything that you said up until that last part, the let your pet only roam in this one space. Maybe not. It depends on the roaming needs of an animal. But like, for example, if just a cat that has only 400 square feet,
a cat could probably get away with it.
Yeah, yeah, and probably some dogs too. Maybe the smaller kinds of dog.
Yeah, yeah. I just wonder about that. If you would end up having to, I mean, I would probably consider just having a separate play space that within the broader communal space that is pet friendly. That
like
does
a
not...
dog park in the suburbs.
Yeah, basically something like that.
Those exist. Like you could have a little like, here's the pet common area where you can, you have like the dog run out in the back, yeah. For example, if you're trying to run. And then if you're trying to like do the socialization for the dogs a little bit at a time, but then for the rest of the time, it's like, okay, you're just going to go and hang out by yourself because you can't, you dog cannot manage yourself with the other animals without supervision. So you can go to the supervised space to hang out with the other dogs, but that's taxing on the rest of us humans, and we can only dedicate so much attention to that. For the rest of the time, you go off to your own separate space.
Yeah. At which point you need a separate thing, which is a critical mass of animals to keep themselves occupied, which is what the Bobeks have, is they have they have a basically self-generating social environment for animals, which is good for them. It's probably not great to have one dog. Even though obviously having more dogs is more work, they at least can not spend all day ruminating on whatever dogs ruminate about.
You can only imagine. This is, by the way, coming back to the father slash parent slash unclehood thing from earlier. This is why I'm doing, if I'm doing parenthood, octuplets.
Yeah.
To have the self-generating social scene for the children.
I mean, that probably doesn't hurt. To have, you maybe don't need eight of them, but like...
Well, it would be two groups of four.
Oh, okay. Very good.
The control group and the experiment group.
Red team, blue team.
That's right, yeah.
One of them gets 1,500 calories, the other one gets 2,000 calories.
Anyway, so yeah, dog run in the back, possibly. Also, there are other pets than dogs and cats. Turtles exist, but for example... what else? People have rabbits. You said
rabbits.
Rats exist. Rats. Guinea pigs are a thing too. It's like dogs, but much smaller, I guess.
It's not the way around I would have gone. I would have gone with a large rat, but that's...
Sure. Yeah. I guess in my mind, like the more familiar pet is the dog or the cat. So everything, the baseline.
Everything is a modulus of the dog or cat.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean... There is a situation in which, and this could just be all of my neuroses about pets projecting onto this and being more of a problem than it actually would be, because I haven't spent that much time in an environment where there's just perpetual pets existing.
Good one.
Some of that. Some of that is a cleanliness problem, which that's actually maybe the most important critical mass for a compound to me, is the ability to have a very regular maid service. Because I just like, A, I don't like cleaning anyway, but you have to get to a point where it is cost effective to clean up other people's messes so that you just don't have to argue about it at all. And I don't know how expensive it would be to have someone come in every day and clean all the dishes, but you know, that would be a pretty dramatic quality of life improvement to have someone just at the end of the day come by and for however many hours it takes, hopefully not more than two or three, to just put everything back. That would set a lot of awkward conversations aside. That would grease the wheels quite a bit.
Put everything back. I was like, well, you can have a maid come in once a week or something like that, but you're taking that to the next level.
No, I'm thinking it's got to be more aggressive than that. I think you got to be, it's got to be something where, you know, you have to quash all the conversations about it, basically. And I don't think once a week will accomplish that. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
When you and I lived in the same building, was that a thing that I could have improved on more?
No, but we're both aggressively conscientious, and I don't want to limit the compound to aggressively conscientious people.
Fair enough, yeah.
Because that's, you know, complementarity and the rest of it. Like, it's half the advantage of having a bunch of people together. But, yeah, it's trying to solve an uncomfortable problem, and it is a potentially capital-intensive problem to solve. And we know that it is expensive. We don't know whether or not there's a natural equilibrium that you can fall into if you do put in the legwork. But we know for sure that there's a stable equilibrium in the form of a single family tract housing, where every person is the lord of their own castle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a stable configuration, at least in the United States. We don't know if the other one works. I would like to hope it works. And there's a lot of examples of it being tried and failing to work. But, you know, I'm different, so it'll be different. Yeah,
absolutely.
So,
talking about getting plates, et cetera, to go back to their positions at the end of the day, and parenthood / children, here's what 6-year-olds to 12-year-olds are useful for. End of every day, you put everything back.
Yeah.
Hire a 6-year-old. There's got to be 6-year-olds around here somewhere that we can hire to put the plates back.
Yeah. Just adopt a bunch of kids for the purpose of...
Foster home, man. Yeah. For between 6 and 10-year-olds, you put the plates back every day, and you get a home.
Those are the rules. That's how it works.
This is the pet that I already have, so I don't have a dog or a cat or a guinea pig or a rat or a turtle or anything like that, but I have a BattleBot.
Yep.
That vacuums. You have one of these, too. Your BattleBot is better than mine. So
It is different.
Your BattleBot is different than mine.
It is not. It is not categorically superior.
Okay.
It does a lot of extremely annoying things.
They both vacuum. Yep. They both do pretty well at vacuuming. Now, we just need... That's 2D vacuuming, two-dimensional vacuuming for the floor. We need three-dimensional vacuuming for the dishes, too.
Yep.
I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah. The part of the compound idea that feels like it is never tried appropriately is not treating everything as communal property, but treating everything as owned property that is shared.
Mm-hmm.
This dynamic, because this dynamic must just break down naturally at some point, is why this doesn't happen more often. But it's the idea that you, in being the owner of something, you are the custodian of it.
Yep.
And essentially, everyone who uses whatever thing you own has to take care of it enough for you to permit them to use it.
Sure.
And that's basically the contract by which it is maintained. And that seems to work okay in this scenario. Like, right now, strictly speaking, I don't know that everyone knows what everyone else owns in the gym as far as, like, power tools and stuff. But at least me and Jacob, I'm reasonably sure we know who bought everything in the gym.
Yeah, and I don't know that. So the way I get around that is I just put the stuff back 90% of the time.
Yeah.
I'm not perfect about it.
But you also use a pretty limited subset of the tools.
Limited set and limited uses, too.
Yeah.
I don't use it too often. I do, but, like, for example, have you ever seen one of the notes? I leave, like, a little receipt saying, like, here are the tools that I've checked out for this amount of time. I don't do this too often.
I was going to say, I think I've seen it once or twice.
Yeah, I leave, like, a little receipt and say, like, the expected time that it's going to be back here.
Yeah. I mean, some of that is stuff not having an explicit home also makes that a problem.
The
decentrality of some of the stuff is a problem. We keep running into that with drills. Some of that's just really simple stuff, like not having clips to hang the stuff properly.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what we have right now works okay. I do think there's a critical mass where if we had, I think, two more people on a property like this would be better than what we're at. I think that would probably be the sweet spot. That would be the economy of scale there, and the communal aspect of having two extra people. The gravity of that, I think, would be more effective and sustainable. But not on quite as much land with quite as many buildings. I think that would be the thing, because we run into each other, but we don't run into each other that much. We don't have again, there's not quite enough density. We're not hitting, in my nuclear reactor analogy, the neutron reaction is not, it's not fomenting the way that it's supposed to.
Yeah, yeah. The rate of neutron traction is not greater than one. That's not a word.
Yeah, it's whichever ones. Ryan was good for this. Ryan was a very, very fast
bouncing
neutron.
Around. That's right.
So, yeah. And that's the thing, is that Ryan is not conscientious. So living in a publicly owned space with him would be more of a gripe than it would be like with you. Not bad. I've lived with Ryan, and it's not, you know, he's not like, he's messy within his own domain, but that's kind of the problem. It's within his own domain. He just doesn't use the public space.
And that's fine if he can, if he contains that with himself. It's like he's not causing problems for anybody. It's
sure.
Like not even problems for himself.
Sure. But then he's not taking advantage of the public side of stuff. Okay. He's going off to do other things, which, you know, maybe that is the self-fulfilling side of this. Maybe you do only bring conscientious people into the compound situation because they're the people who are satisfied with living in a space like that and not going out and not being city type people. So maybe I am solving for a problem that doesn't actually exist.
Could be.
It'd be nice. That'd be cool if I don't have to hire a daily maid service. That would dramatically reduce costs, I imagine.
Or foster care.
Or a foster turning into a foster home. But this is all related to MVB, so I don't feel bad about taking us off track. Because it is, you know, what does the next version of this building look like? If we were to it's usually wave a magic wand, but in this case, it's wave a wrecking ball and destroy this building. A magic wrecking ball. And the magical part will be putting another building up. We'll see how that goes.
Uh-huh.
Would you make it any larger than this?
Let me think about that for a moment. I don't think it'd be required to make it larger than this. I didn't take full advantage of possible modularity of this place. Hanging more things from the ceilings. More things on casters to move them around when other people are coming in. Like more different kinds of perhaps automated lighting to remind you like, hey, the house is in this mode right now. You cannot use it for work. You have to use it for like just pleasure, just reading time or just hanging out time.
That's a whole domain that we have not cracked is using lighting in that way. Uh-huh. I mean, Jacob has talked about that. I've talked about where you have like the concept of do not disturb or recreational time or just something to signal. We've not figured out how to do that.
I did do that a bit in like kind of a manual way here, like just talking simply about the lights up top here. I would not turn on the lights at night, and I would turn on just kind of warm lighting as a reminder to myself, like, hey, this is just the hangout space right now. It's not work time. And it did not work perfectly, but there was definitely something there, and it definitely did succeed to an extent. So I would go further in on that kind of thing. So back to your original question about making the place larger, I don't think that's necessary. I think that just being more creative with solutions, like modularity solutions and just like vibes solutions to problems like that could be the way to go.
What is the first thing, if you had to remove something from this building and put it into either a communal or more public space, what would it be?
Let me think about that.
What is the first thing you would outsource in this building?
I guess I could do without any kitchen in here.
You would move the kitchen.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I could definitely do without a kitchen in here. Maybe there would still be, like, you could cook and then bring stuff in here to eat, and even have accommodations for, like, up to four people eating in here. But food preparation doesn't necessarily need to be duplicated.
Okay.
As you pointed out, like, food hall is quite close by.
I mention it because I'm curious how... And I guess it was the first thing on the chopping block as you looked around. I was curious what it would take, what either contraction of space or improvement of other amenities would compel you to eliminate it. I mean, you thought about it pretty hard, so I'm assuming it would take a lot to justify eliminating this. Like, you clearly find this convenient.
Yeah, it's nice, but... one of the reasons it's convenient is because it's convenient to not have a conversation about getting more efficiency out of the space that exists over at your house, at the Rock House.
Yeah.
In other words, it's just an inertia thing. And that I think has been one of the strengths of you and I having a relationship here. It's like, we can talk about these kinds of things, right? And this is a thing that we did better out of necessity when we were occupying the same building.
Yeah.
We don't need to do that anymore. Like, we've got the two places. So that just kind of slipped through the cracks, and we didn't need to let it slip through the cracks. Also, like, this was here. Like, we wanted to make this, that was part of the conceit of this building. Let's make a self-sustaining
yeah.
and a totally contained thing, and it happens to have a kitchen. We could have said, like, okay, we can build this without the kitchen, and that would have required just more creativity and more conversation about how to use the existing kitchen over at the Rock House, but it just, we didn't need to do it.
Yeah, well, and so that doesn't... The question then, though, becomes, sure, inertia is the primary factor there. The other question is it worth the hassle of trying to make that work some other way? Is kind of what I'm getting at. Is there a reason to try to evict the kitchenette from a building that is your private quarters? Or would it ultimately just make sense for you to have this here instead of trying to make it work?
I'm sure we could find another use for this space. For example, I got the little mini gym set up here too. By the way, when you asked me earlier what would be on the chopping block for things to remove, I was kind of thinking, like, maybe I wouldn't need this kind of workout space or / stretching space. But the reason I didn't say that is because it was very nice to have a little bit of space available to me all the time as, like, here's a physical activity space that you're always going to kind of go through to remind you to, like, just be active.
Yeah.
So that was pretty nice. And maybe I would actually make that space a little bit larger at the expense of eliminating some of the kitchen space. Not sure. But it's a possibility.
No, and I buy that. I definitely do not just use the proper gym for exercise. So mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not
it's an effort to go out there.
Yeah, well, and it's not literally right there.
That's right. That's what I mean. Yeah,
it's out of sight, out of mind mm-hmm. problems. Yeah, it's okay to have duplication of some activities. It's trying to figure out what the appropriate balance of it is without it just again. Falling into the inertia of everybody having all their own stuff. That's the part that I just keep rebelling against, because I just don't, like, even in a scenario, the most viable alternative to the compound that I can imagine would be to buy four corners. Not that this would be easy to do, honestly, unless you bought into a new development, and even then it would probably be challenging, would be to buy four adjacent suburban houses and just, you know, have friends in four separate houses sharing a backyard. And that would be very appealing. I would like that a lot. But it still reeks of the inefficiencies related with that. I mean, every room, you know, every house has its own utility closet with its own washers and all of the, like, there's still stuff about that bothers me a great deal.
And you'd also perhaps be bothered by not being able to change those things in those houses. Like, oh, we're going to hurt the resale value if we do XYZ, like eliminate this utility closet in this house, for example.
That's one of the fun things about the compound, is you just don't care about resale value.
Okay.
You just ignore it entirely. You either will find someone else, some other enterprising, ambitious person who wants to try to do the same thing and thinks they can crack it. Or you don't, and that's just how it goes.
Sure, sure. Or you could even, like, sell shares in it. Like, oh, we're going to keep the same four houses in the suburbs, but we're going to, like, get someone to slot into this as one other person moves away for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe that ultimately is just, you know, quote-unquote give up and just figure out how to buy consecutive properties, which is what we did here. I mean, to some extent, you're just trying to smooth over the inefficiencies of owning three separate properties, or four, as would make more sense in a suburban context. I don't know. Maybe you just let that... Maybe you don't make the grand gesture. Maybe you do just buy consecutive properties and then meld your way into a more efficient methodology. It feels like it would take a long time and involve a lot of bickering. That's, of course, the other problem with being an architect, is that architecture is almost inherently anti-democratic. It's a top-down exercise, so you run into that as well.
That could be okay. You just have one architect that kind of leans toward that more democracy, but the other people need some kind of... the other people need a leader to follow, and, like, you find those people that are interested in that sort of thing. It's like, okay, we can all subject ourselves to a little bit of tyranny / architecture, but then we get this kind of benefit that we're interested in. So yeah. It works out.
Yeah. Just I'm imagining four houses with separate game rooms that just are all right next to it. This is always the image that infuriates me every time I think about all this stuff, is everybody's separate living room that they're maintaining. And because everybody does, I mean, everybody's maybe too strong, but people have aesthetic preferences and they don't want to live in other people's houses, which is supposed to be alleviated by, and I think would largely be alleviated by each unit, whether that's a single or a couple, or if large enough, a couple of children, owning a 400 to 500 square foot space that they appoint to their exact requirements, and then you have public spaces that are more geared toward communal use. I would hope that would be enough of an outlet for people to not feel constrained by that, but I don't know. I
suspect that people don't care that much.
Maybe
and,
they don't.
And that this is just like, we're just going with the default that's available to us. Suburban homes, apartments, that's available, so let's go get it.
Yeah.
But let's not think about the alternatives. Let's just, because that's too taxing. I've got other stuff to do, so I'm not going
to
do it.
I'm trying to imagine how many square feet of space my mom would need to be able to decorate for her to feel like she's not constrained by the choices being made for her in other domains. And I know it's less than she thinks it is. I just don't know whether or not it's 400 to 500 square feet. That's the question. I have to hope it is, because that makes all of this work.
Yeah, yeah. I'm shaking my head at some of this, because it's like, I suspect that one of the reasons people feel compelled to decorate not 500 square feet of space, but 2,000 or 2,500 square feet of space, is because that's the default. And it's like, oh, that person over there has 2,000. Well, I should also have 2,000 because I'm comparing myself to the people that are available for comparison. And like, no, just don't do it. And here's another space. You have 400 square feet to decorate, but then you've got these other benefits too. And can that be okay? It's like, maybe not. Or maybe you can be compelled to, or just like get used to, oh, actually, that's kind of cool. Let's just do it that way.
Yeah. No, it's hard to contemplate that with this. We need a more representative sample of people to talk about it with, I think. I think that stretches what we can talk about at this table, because I think we're much more flexible about that than some other people. So, other things related to MVB, do you have anything else we haven't covered?
Let me look at this list. Modularity, ceiling suspended things.
I mean, you would have, part of the reason you don't have more things suspended from the ceiling is the loft. The loft is occupying over a third of the ceiling.
That's true. I would have put like shelves, and I would have put some shelves up for some more stuff. I was hesitant to put more money into this place, because a part of me was thinking like, is it eventually going to have to come down? And another part of me was thinking, I don't have much of an income coming in right now, so I don't want to put more money into it.
Yeah.
And another part of me was like, I'm good. And if I need more stuff, if I need more stuff / functions, just stop thinking that, because you don't, because everything's fine as is. And yeah. I was like, ah, yes, thank you. And that goes back to my simplicity comment engendered by the kitchen from earlier. It's like, this is it. This is what I need. And I'm like, that's been great.
No. One of the biggest advantages that I keep forgetting, I keep stepping over, but I think would actually be huge about having a proper private public commune space would be to have a storage closet that is generally usable for things that don't attract bugs. Mm-hmm. 'Cause just the ability to have, to free up what people normally stuff in a closet, to just have, a dedicated 12-foot-tall, 50 square feet of space to just, so you don't need an actual storage unit. It's within two minutes of having the thing, but not having to store it under your bed or on a shelf or shit. Like, that would be such a game changer, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that would actually be maybe one of the most compelling reasons to do something like that. To be able to have your private space not cluttered with your own shit.
Yes.
I think that would actually be really compelling.
Yeah, one of the things that I have cluttered in here is just like backup hurricane food, for example. That's the reason my bed is still the size that it is, so I can store stuff under the bed.
Exactly. Like not having to care about that would be huge.
Yeah, yeah. My bike is basically just taking up storage space right now. And that was actually one of the other things on this list. This wardrobe thing was fine. I would have preferred something that actually looks better than that. It looks kind of trashy. The wardrobe that I've got behind me. But then on the other hand, I liked how this place didn't have closets because it forced me to be confronted by my stuff so that my stuff could say, do you really need me? And I could say no and get out. I don't know which of those I would prefer more, having the closet or just like having that thing. But yeah, your comment about the general, like a small temperature controlled storage facility on the property would be nice.
I fully expect the old utility theater room to become that. Yeah. And it's something like, it will probably still be an electronics workspace because it doesn't take that much space to do that. But simply having a spot where it felt initially like a waste of a room to have basically a giant storage closet. But the more I think about it, that's really compelling. Mm. It's really compelling to just have a place to put all the stuff that doesn't have an immediate use case in the room it's in. No. I think I will actually do that, especially because we're probably going to need that space relatively soon here.
To store some of my crap?
Some of this and some of the stuff from the other places as well. We will actually need the space.
Yeah, and that kind of gets into another question that we asked during that four-person meeting that we had on the day that we got the notice, which was like, hey, let's decide what not only what to salvage of the MVB, like materials and stuff, but also just like the items that I've got in here. And I looked around and I was like, not much. There's not too much that I would want to just keep. I don't know where I'm going next or when I'm going next. I think that generally speaking, I'm going to prioritize like being flexible to whatever job will take me, and I'll probably move for a job if necessary. There are some actuary jobs in Orlando, but they're limited, and I'll probably need to move. I would say there's like a 70% chance I would need to move at least for a couple of years. And if I'm going to move far away, then I could just liquidate stuff. Like, I don't need to bring the bed with me. I can just buy a bed where I end up. I like the mega desk. So I guess the question becomes like, what could I fit in a car? I guess it could also be like, what could fit into a U-Haul, but I don't really want to drive a U-Haul from Florida to another place.
Sure.
So maybe whatever can fit into my car, but yeah.
No, and that's all that's hard to even think about much right now because the variables are so vast there. I mean, even just the distance you would have to move would factor into that. So that's probably not worth considering. I mean, as far as like storing stuff, that's pretty straightforward. We have place to put stuff. That whole wall of stuff would fit in the utility room today. So if we needed to get it out of here, which we don't have to do for at least 2 weeks. So.
I could decrease the size of my already small library by about 50%, I think. for example.
Books only.
Good, yeah, yeah. And books that are not taped closed.
I need to do that. I need to flush my library. It's getting too big.
Your library is about to overflow.
Yeah.
Your library is larger than mine. It's still small.
Yeah.
But it's larger. And it's more importantly, it's taking up almost all of the nook space, which seems to be the constraint that you've placed on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's books only get to take up that one shelf. Mm-hmm. And then they got to go. So. Yeah. Anything else we need to cover before we blow this place up?
Just start damaging it immediately. Start putting holes in the wall to remind ourselves that it's coming soon. Nothing. No, I don't think I don't think that's required right now, but I also don't think that there's much else or anything else to talk about.
Very good. We've learned what we can from this building.
We can continue learning lessons retrospectively after the place has been demolished. But I think that that's all for now.
Very good. Matt, thanks for being part of the Machination Log.
It's been my pleasure. Cool.